is an awful lot of people. The story of this evening, a very fine performer, a very fine writer, and a political man. I want you to all welcome Gil Scott-Heron.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Very glad to see that so many people can come out and join us this evening. I'd like to do a song for you that we did a couple of years ago about a place down in South Carolina. A place that is located on the Savannah River near a town called Barnwell. It is a place that is used to house toxic waste, waste from nuclear activities. We would like to take you into a song that we call South Carolina. Factory down in South Carolina with a death potential that's uncontrolled by government designers. It will house atomic waste and be a constant reminder that they got a great big time bomb ticking in South Carolina. See, whatever happened to the protests and the rain? And whatever happened to the voices of the same? And whatever happened to the people who gave a damn?
Okay, we all. We all know who that is in the background. That's Mr. Gil Scott-Heron, poet, writer, teacher, educator, father, probably grandfather by now, jitterbugger. When I was in high school, we used to party to his music. And like I said, educator, he was teaching at Howard University for a little while. He's written a couple of history books there. He fell on some hard times, but he's back up now. I think he's touring. And this is a 6 p.m. Friday Kill Radio News. Last Friday before Christmas 2005. 6 p.m. Friday Kill Radio News. I can't believe it. I'm the only one in the studio. The outer office is usually packed with people. It feels good to be here by myself. I have some interesting things today that I've been promising for the past months or two I was going to do. I'm going to read a story to you guys today about, and I'm going to put this up on Radio for All too, so you can get it. Radioforall.net. If you don't know what that is, you got to check those guys out. Send them some money too. They're in upstate New York. They play all the really progressive, newsworthy stuff that's going on around the world. And if you got speakers on your computer, and who don't, you can hear it. Let's see. That's Gil Scott-Heron still in the background. But they're Radio for All, radio4all.net. And that's where us people here at Kill Radio, we archive 90% of our stuff. We're starting to put stuff on our homepage too, but most of us going to Radio for All. Very progressive group of people. And today I'm going to read a story about this woman, female attorney. Her name is... Miss L. Wallace Pate. She's being harassed by rogue LAPD cops because she's trying to help at-risk youth. I'm going to read a great story that was written in an independent LA newspaper here in Los Angeles called City Beat. And then we're going to hear an interview that moi did with the great Mr. Ron Kovic. For you people who are not familiar with Ron Kovic, you will be when I tell you in a second who he was. Everybody's heard of Ron, Tom Cruise. Well, Tom Cruise played Ron Kovic in the great Oliver Stone film Born on the 4th of July. And that film was based on a real person, Mr. Ron Kovic. And turn off Gil in the background here for a second. And I got to do an interview with Ron around the beginning of the war. So this interview is about 2 or 3 years, about 2 years old. Ron makes it to all the protests in his wheelchair. He even got to one that I couldn't get to because I felt like such a wimp because it was raining. But Ron was there in his wheelchair. You know, he lost movement in his legs during Vietnam. If you saw the film, it's an excellent adaptation of how he lost his legs, how he lost, you know, his legs in the Vietnam War. In a way, I'm kind of glad I interviewed him before I saw the film because I knew I would have asked him a bunch of stupid questions about the film, even though it was a good film and I love Oliver Stone. Well, I like his films. I don't really love Oliver Stone. But I met him once. I actually auditioned for him for the film The Doors back in my acting days. I was supposed to play the role of a, who's that? Not like a Jimi Hendrix type character. But again, in case you're wondering who's talking, my name is Hassan, and this is the Kill Radio 6 p.m. news. So let's go back into Gil Scott-Heron for a little while, and then we're going to come back on the other side and listen to Mr. Ron Kovic at the at a peace protest on Hollywood Boulevard. We had maybe, 100,000 people up there about 2 years ago, right before the war started. Maxine Waters spoke, a lot of Vietnam vets spoke. And it was really a thrill getting to meet Mr. Ron Kovic. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. And we all respect you in the movement, in the progressive movement here in this country, Mr. Kovic. So let's go back into Mr. Gil Scott-Heron singing South Carolina. And I didn't know Jackson Browne was at this concert. Wait a minute.
Justified to dying in the jungle of Vietnam. Talking about South Carolina. I'm thinking about South Carolina. Worried about South Carolina. Nervous over South Carolina. See, time keeps slipping away. Don't know what to do, but time keeps slipping away. I don't know. See, time keeps slipping away. Don't know what to do, see, but time keeps slipping away. They're talking about South Carolina, I'm thinking about South Carolina, wait, South Carolina, give us who, South Carolina, see. South Carolina.
Speaking out against the war. And we are going to have more and more military families, and we are going to have more cab drivers and teachers. This is going to become a powerful citizens' movement of transformation. We plan to not only stop this war, but we're determined that we have to change this very social order, this very society, if we're ever going to stop these wars for good and to end this needless suffering and this senselessness.
Yeah. So we're going to ask you all to step back because we just.
Ron, I'm sorry, sir. I'm with the IMC. I just really want, I appreciate it.
What's IMC?
Independent Media Center.
All right.
And Kill Radio. And we have a lot of people at the station who listen to you. And actually, when we told a lot of people on the air that you were going to be here, you know, because a lot of people are familiar with your cause. I don't mean to sound so academic, but what was it like in those jungles over there when you knew that you weren't a killer? What was it like being over there in Vietnam?
Well, it was very difficult, as it is, I'm sure, for the soldiers who are now serving in Iraq. One of the things that I said today is that we have to, as a peace movement, as a growing and very powerful peace movement, we have to welcome the soldiers to this peace movement. We have to let them know that there is an opportunity for healing. There is an opportunity for community, that we are here for them. We supported them 12 months ago, and we're supporting them today. The families, very, very emotional and very powerful, the families of young Americans who only 2 months ago were killed in Iraq are speaking out. They're with us.
And that's great. I love that.
With us here. And I'm saying that the troops will be joining them. They will be coming home, and they will be marching with us, too.
Ron, why is Bush ignoring the family, the soldiers who are protesting? Why is the Pentagon, why are they ignoring these families?
I think it's a great mistake to ignore these brave and courageous Americans. When you talk about patriotism, and you talk about sacrifice, and you talk about service to country, you better honor these families first and foremost. And the fact that a president or an administration or a government in power right now, especially one that's perpetrating an immoral and an illegal war in Iraq, would neglect these families and neglect their sons and daughters is an outrage. It's a disgrace. I think it's enraging people. I think the families are angry, and once people begin to realize that they've turned their backs on these families, that they're not respecting their children's sacrifices, people are going to be tripling the numbers at these demonstrations. Everybody's going to be coming out. This is going to become an extremely powerful protest movement.
Ron, one more important question. I got to ask this to all the Vietnam vets. The fact that our president went AWOL when you guys went and fought, can you just address that?
I'll address it this way. I think Max Cleland, who lost two legs and an arm, a Vietnam veteran, who's in a wheelchair, like myself, and who wrote a blistering piece in the Atlanta Constitution last week, likening what's going on in Iraq right now to another Vietnam. Max was the former head of the Veterans Administration.
Right.
He was a United States Senator. And I think one of the things that Max said is what I completely agree with him. And that's that President Bush never went to the war. Rumsfeld never went to war. Cheney never went to war. And those that were never in Vietnam or combat did not have the opportunity to learn the painful and agonizing lessons that we learned, that I'm still speaking that truth and that lesson to people today. That was a very important lesson. Since they failed to learn that lesson, since they chose to join the National Guard and avoid service, I can understand people not wanting to go to Vietnam. But they also lost the opportunity to recognize that this type of behavior is wrong, it's immoral. We learned a great deal in Vietnam. We learned that this type of policy, this behavior, can only destroy, can only ruin America in the end. We love this country. We care about this country. We're not going to let Bush or any of those other incompetents destroy this country that we love. And if we have to put every American in this city and in the cities all over this country on the streets, we're going to let freedom ring, we're going to stop this war, and we're going to bring a true and authentic democracy to America, and we will not stop until we win.
Mr. Kovac, the IMC thanks you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm talking with Scott with International Amp, one of the guys that they organized this whole...
Now, every word I say is messed up, and I know why. Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high.
Oh, no.
I had to go to Vietnam, but then I got high. I tried to hide out in Alabama, but then I got high. I was way too scared to fight, so I had to lie. Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high.
Who knows?
After 9-1-1, I was king, but then I got high.
Yeah.
I had to catch that Osama ding-a-ling, but then I got high. Instead, I attacked Iraq, and no one knew why.
Who knows?
Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high. Now we've got a big deficit, because I got high. Even Republicans are throwing a fit, because I got high. Now the whole country is messed up, and we all know why. Because I got high, because I got high, because I got high. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. President, what about health care, Iran, and Social Security? What do you plan to do?
Hold on and let me think about it. You know, I say we get them homos instead.
Let me have the last word. In the last year, two things have...
Let me see, and... I want you guys to excuse my bad shifting into gear here. I'm just so excited that everything in the studio actually works today. I love Kill Radio. And that was George Butch talking about when he got high. Some people think he still is high. And before that, we listened to that interview I did again with Mr. Ron Kovic. Sorry if I keep gleaning about it, because I'm very proud of it, because I have so much respect for that man. Again, that was Ron Kovic, who the film, the Oliver Stone film, the great Oliver Stone film, Born on the 4th of July, it was based on his life, played by Tom Cruise. And this is the 6 p.m. Friday Kill Radio News. Last Friday before the Christmas 2005, and my name is Hassan. Oh, and I just wanted to vent for a second, for a minute, like I never do, because I didn't do the news last week. We had some technical difficulties here, and I wanted to vent about this governor here in California. If you listen to my news a lot, you'll know I vent about him. You did hear they're going to take the name down off of this studio, off of this soccer stadium in his hometown in Germany where he grew up. They're going to take the name down because in Europe they're pretty progressive about not wanting to execute people. Yeah, in his hometown, this little village right outside of Berlin or somewhere or near Germany, where he grew up, they had his name on a soccer stadium and they took it down. But they said that the mayor still is trying to be on friendly terms with him, but with Schwarzenegger. But basically, the people in the village don't want Schwarzenegger's name on their stadium. And I was reading the LA Times the other day, and Schwarzenegger is such a fuck face. He said, typical politician, you know, even though he's not an American citizen, but that doesn't mean anything. He had his press, I guess it was his press people, because I don't think he's bright enough to do this, but his press people, I'm sure he okayed it. His press people came out, they were like a day too late, too. They came out saying that they had rushed off a letter to this village mayor telling him, well, we want you to take down the name. Take Schwarzenegger's name off of this stadium. Take it down. That was just their way of trying to get ahead of the, get the jump on these guys. You know, get the jump on, because they knew they were going to take it down anyway, because they know people in Europe are pretty progressive against the death penalty, you know. But what I was going to say was the day after they executed Tookie Williams, Schwarzenegger's his aides came out with this long report that he said he had stayed up for 3 days writing. Actually, it came out that this new California Supreme Court nominee, she had wrote it for him, this woman that he picked for the Supreme Court. And she wrote, and Schwarzenegger talked about how him and her agonized over this 6 or 7 page report about why Tookie Williams should die. And you know, they didn't print the whole thing in the LA Times, thank God, because I probably wouldn't have read it. But they printed maybe one or two paragraphs, and it fucking made me really, really mad. Excuse my French, because sometimes my mother listens to this news show. So, mother dear, I'm sorry for cussing, but the Republicans get on my fucking nerves. As you used to say, mother dear, my last nerve. They get on my last nerve. But anyway, this report came out. This report came out that one of the reasons why Schwarzenegger decided to murder Tookie Williams was because Tookie wrote, in one of his books that he wrote, one of his children's books, he dedicated it to three people. Nelson Mandela. See, Nelson Mandela, George Jackson, and Malcolm X. And so Schwarzenegger said because he mentioned George Jackson, he should die because he looked up to a man like George Jackson. And because the day that George Jackson died in the late 60s up at Soledad Prison, I think a lot of California prison guards, their life was put in jeopardy, and they could have died. Ooh, they could have died. So because of that, Schwarzenegger, because he looked up to a man like George Jackson, Schwarzenegger should die. Now, here's what I say to this stupid governor. He didn't even write this, okay, because chances are, in the early 70s, Yeah, it was the early 70s, like 70 or 71, when George Jackson was murdered. He was murdered by these prison guards at Soledad Prison. Our illustrious governor was probably in a marijuana haze, somewhere groping women, you know. So I'm sure he knows nothing about the political struggle back then. This woman who wrote this thing, because she's probably a bright woman, she might know a little bit about it. But I can't believe Governor Schwarzenegger had the audacity to say that one of the reasons why Tookie Williams should die is because he looked up to George Jackson. George Jackson was murdered by California prison guards. He was enticed to go out into the middle of the courtyard at Soledad Prison, where these like six or seven prison guards, they shot him, they filled him full of bullets. George Jackson's mother and family could probably sue the state of California right now because their son was murdered by California prison guards. And this fuck-face Schwarzenegger, again, excuse me for cussing, mother dear, Schwarzenegger had the audacity to say that Tookie Williams should die because he looked up to a man like George Jackson. I guess they couldn't mention Malcolm X because that would have started another riot. I mean, how dare someone, a lowlife like Schwarzenegger, say anything bad about my brother Malcolm X. Okay, so anyway, that's my rant for today. And again, you know, my heart goes out to the victims who were involved in the Tookie Williams case, the people who were that they said Tookie murdered here in Los Angeles. I didn't realize until I saw some emails that were going around a couple weeks ago that there was an effort to keep black people off of Tookie Williams' trial. And Tookie pleaded innocent. Whether he was innocent or not, I do not know. Okay? But I didn't know he had pleaded innocent. So that's new to me, too. And there was an effort. There were no black people on his jury. So I don't know. And plus, the man was nominated for a Nobel Prize. I mean, what do we get by killing him? What comes out of that? You know, what do we get by killing him? You know, all my life I've went back and forth with the death penalty. But I'm totally against it now because we regress as a society. We, you know, there's only like six or seven countries that still execute people. America's one of them. And I think a couple of Middle Eastern countries. Even Senegal does not execute people, you know. So again, I'm going to read this article from the Los Angeles City Beat magazine here on Kill Radio, Internet Radio in Los Angeles on the 25th floor overlooking the beautiful Hollywood Freeway, 24th floor of the Arco Towers, as we overlook the Hollywood Freeway here at the beautiful Kill Radio Studios. And again, this article I'm getting ready to read is from the City Beat magazine here in Los Angeles, October 13th, 2005. It's written, I think the editor of the City Beat wrote this article. It's L. Wallace Pate, the civil rights attorney on LAPD abuse in Watts, getting set up and how the consent decree is ignored. In 2004, civil rights attorney L. Wallace Pate was investigating some environmental justice issues regarding pollution of the Union Pacific Rail rights-of-way in Watts. When she started hearing stories about the cops, residents came to the lawyer, who was African-American, telling her about physical abuse at the hands of the L.A. Police Department, about false arrests, about setups, about violations of the 2001 Federal Civil Rights Consent Decree, and sexual harassment. She began compiling these reports and bringing them to the LAPD Inspector General until she was forced to stop. That is, because complainants were allegedly being threatened by the police. Excuse me. But Pate is not the kind of woman to simply give up. A 30-year veteran who has established a body of statutory and appellate law regarding the protection of foster children, the Century City Attorney was recently selected as one of the top 50 trial lawyers in Southern California. She has been a delegate to the UN Fourth World Conference on Women and has appeared on 60 Minutes and CNN. left with reams of material about LAPD misdeeds in one of the city's most troubled neighborhoods. She's now decided to file a class action lawsuit on behalf of her interviewers. Oh, okay, this is Dean Coopers, who wrote this article. That was just setting the article up. Okay, City B, what exactly did you find when you began working these environmental justice cases in Watts, Ms. Pate? I discovered this amazing dynamic between the police and the residents, a cross between marital law and training day. A lot of the residents lived in fear. They told me about incidents where innocent people had been set up and sent to prison based upon testimony that was trumped up by the officers that were running the narcotics units in the projects. And then I started interviewing the people, and I contacted LAPD Inspector General Brigat. I contracted LAPD Inspector General Andre Brigat Jr. I took some complaints directly to him. He promised that he would check them out, and I agreed that I would make the people available for the follow-up. Recorded interviews with internal affairs. I also researched everything I could find on the gang injunctions, and I got my hands on the consent decree that came out of the Rampart investigation. Were you focusing on the projects? What really struck me was this dynamic between the police and the people who lived in the projects. It was almost like slavery. 8 or 9 cop cars would drive up to 2 or 3 people standing on a corner just talking. I've seen this myself, and they tell the young men to get on the wall with absolutely no probable cause. This was in Imperial Courts, and they don't have a gang injunction over there. And as soon as the young men would see the cops, they would automatically put their hands up and walk to the nearest wall. Now that's pathetic. And more likely than not, they're going to put them in the gang book, whether they're a gang member or not. You were bringing these people to the Inspector General? I was doing this to try to address what I saw was a profound violation of the civil rights and human rights of the Watts residents. There was no Fourth Amendment protection afforded these people. In Watts, there is this myth of violence. I didn't see any violence when I was there. No one was shooting anybody. I felt completely safe walking around. I am African American, but I look white. The police, after a while, would tell the residents, "That white woman walking around here is not going to help you. She's just going to make it worse for you." City Beat. You had evidence they told people to stay away from you? Yeah, but they didn't. They had my phone number. One called me because his rights were being violated, and I knew the consent decree. So I asked the officer to give me his serial number, and he told me he'd just come right up and see me right now in my house at 11 o'clock at night. Very arrogant. I've had people tell me that they were threatened by the police and forced to commit perjury and say that a certain person had shot somebody which they did not know to be true, or the police would get them evicted from their housing. And when they refused to do that, the effort was made to evict this woman from her house. She lived there for 25 years, and she was fully and gainfully employed, and she went to the housing authorities over there in Imperial Courts. So she wasn't evicted. City Beat. So the police would try to have uncooperative witnesses evicted. The one strike rule provides that if you're a tenant in a public housing development and any relative that you associate with is involved in any kind of crime, whether or not there's a conviction or an arrest, you can be evicted. For example, a couple of young women told me that cops had approached them and wanted them to have affairs with them or they would get them evicted. That they stalked one young mother when she went to pick up her daughter. That her mother, who also lived in the housing project, went to report this to the LAPD watch commander and was told that if they didn't have any forms, that her mother, who also lived in the housing projects, went to report this to the LAPD watch commander and was told that they didn't have any forms. And then when she was stopped by the cop she was trying to report, pulled over and forced to sit on the sidewalk as he went through her car two or three times, the cops do this to send a message of fear and isolation. City B, was this unusual that women would be propositioned? Some of the girls would have sex with them while they were on the job in exchange for money or drugs. Got those reports. How many, City Beat, how many of these reports do you have? It is on a complaint form and you submit them, but then there is a recorded interview with two or three armed officers with internal affairs. I have 15 of those. I submitted about 20 and then I stopped. City Beat, why did you stop? What I didn't know when I started the process was that within 48 hours of getting the report, the officer is notified. So everybody was just out there with bullseyes targets on, and they got targeted. Then they started targeting the community leaders. They targeted a community leader in Imperial Courts who had worked with the Department of Justice. He made a complaint about some treatments that had occurred by law officers, and he got set up. City Beat, what do you mean set up? After community leader called me yesterday, the same thing happened to him. This happened in Jordan Downs. They arrested him for violating the gang injunction when he wasn't a gang member. They locked him up. Then they let him out. But his arrest puts him in the National Gang Database, which will prelude him from ever doing his work with children again. City B, did this guy make one of the reports? No, I stopped doing that. Okay, City B, did this guy make one of the reports? No, I stopped doing that because I was putting too many of the residents in jeopardy. It's like the police constitute another gang doing down there. Once your name gets in that gang book, that allows them to stop you any time they want. The consent decree is not being followed at all. What happened with those 20 complaints you filed? City Beat, what happened with those 20 complaints you filed? Nothing. The interviews ended in November of last year, and I got a series of certified letters saying, quote unquote, we're investigating, close quote, and they want to investigate again. They want to take another statement. And I say, no, that's not going to happen. One shot is enough. But I have a plan. What allows this dynamic to continue is the pervasive power of the myth of violence. Not all the cops are bad, not all the residents are innocent. And we want strong cops who have a relationship with the kids and can really mentor the kids. That is not now happening. So how do you dispel a myth and get rid of a fear that the cops have on one side and the people have on the other? You bring the players to the table. You get a strong youth commission and you fix it so that these people that do come forward are protected. And one of the ways to do that is to have a grand jury investigation where their names will not be released, because we have to make a record of this. And a story, let's see, again, that was written by a gentleman named Dean Cooper. Mr. Cooper, I hope I pronounced your name right. Cooper is K like in Kentucky, K-U-I-P-E-R-S. Dean Cooper is who wrote this article for the Los Angeles City Beat magazine, October 13th, 2005. I'm sure they have a website you can go to and check that out. And again, this is Kill Radio. Kill Radio, 6 p.m. news. My name is Hassan. We were listening to Brother Ron Kovic a little earlier in the show. And again, I guess I'm so excited today that everything's working in the studio. I'm not having smooth transfers. But I think I hear George Clinton. He's getting ready to tell how much he likes Kill Radio. Let me see if I can bring him up. Where is George Clinton at? The famous P-Funker. Let me see.
Kill Radio. They're killing me. They do the dog, y'all. Dr. Funkenstein's here, better known as George Clinton. Tail ain't nothing but a long booty. Kill Radio, They're killing me. Dr. Funkenstein's here, better known as George Clinton. Tail ain't nothing but a long booty. Kill radio, they're killing me. Dr. Funkenstein's here, better known as George Clinton. Tail ain't nothing but a long booty. Kill radio, they're killing me. Coming away to Savannah, she been cooped up too long.
Red hot mama looking to the city. Bugsy dances and big tents.
Dr. Funkenstein's here, better known as George Clinton. Tail ain't nothing but a long booty. Kill radio, they're killing me.
I'm fucking, I'm proud. I'm fucking, I'm proud. Dig it. I'm fucking, I'm proud.
Oh, okay. Okay, sorry again. I had just stepped out to check the mail. Thanks, George Clinton, for telling everybody how great Kill Radio is. Oh, in case you want to hear that interview, George Clinton, the famous P-Funker of Funkadelics, did a great interview, phone interview here at Kill Radio, and you can hear that interview on Radio for All. Radio, again, the great radioforall.net. Radio number 4all.net. Just type in George Clinton. GeorgClinton. You know, really quick, I want to read some of the LA Times op-ed. This is from Friday, December 16th, 2005. LA Times op-ed. Bush's admission of mistakes doesn't cut it. This was regarding an editorial. Bush admits mistakes but defends war, December 15th. It's great that the president is finally coming clean about the Iraq war. It would be equally great if he'd apologized to the soldiers killed and wounded, the 30,000 Iraqis killed, as well as those who will be killed in the future, the half of America he may feel unpatriotic for questioning the war, the countries he blasted that turned out to have better intelligence, France, Germany, and others, and the world for berating, it for not standing up to terrorists. None of this is likely to happen because, in the end, President Bush feels that he did the right thing. Does he really think that America would have supported going to war to depose Saddam Hussein? If the intelligence were accurate, in Bush's world, he probably does. And that was written by Robbie Baker from Diamond Bar, California. And regarding the great Richard Pryor, who passed away a couple weeks ago, again, another letter in the LA Times op-ed section, Comedy Archives, regarding, I guess, and there was an editorial here called Edgy for a Black Elegy for a Black Antihero, December 18th. Excuse me. The comic legacies of Lenny Bruce, Jonathan Winters, Richard Pryor, and other comedians are part of the history of the arts that should be archived and even displayed again to new audiences. These talents, like recording artists, still have value and should not be forgotten as they get older or pass away. That was by Richard Baker of Beverly Hills, and those were letters from the LA Times op-ed, Friday, December 16th, 2005. And again, this is killradio.org, and you know, I'm going to go into a little Wayne Shorter for a second here while I. We're going to go in, and then after that, we're going to go into back into Mr. Gil Scott Heron. Let me see. I think I got Wayne Shorter queued up here. I love Wayne Shorter. He was Miles Davis's. He was playing with Miles Davis when he was, what, like 19?
So let's see here. Wait a minute. Here he is in the background. This is Wayne Shorter here on Kill Radio News. And I am Hassan.
a couple of years ago, we were brought into contact with a group of people called In Fact. And In Fact was an organization that had been put together nationally to protest the fact that there is still infant formula being exported to certain parts of the third world. And of course, this has become an important matter in terms of the health of the children there. So we were reminded of a song that we had done, and a very important song that somehow, as you go along and you write more songs, you seem to get away sometimes from those you should have stayed with. So in that respect, we'd like to do a song for you that we did for them. This is called Save the Children.
This press conference today was the low point of my past 90 days, I guess. The little bits and pieces that I caught from members of the so-called working press, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. So we'll get to that in a minute.
Bianca. Hey, good news for the Saudis today. First, a judge in New York dismisses from a lawsuit brought by September 11th family members, dismisses a Saudi charity and two Saudi princes who were named as defendants It says here, a Saudi Arabian charity, two high-level Saudi princes were dismissed as defendants in three civil lawsuits accusing them of providing support to Al-Qaeda before the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack. Federal Judge Richard Casey made the rulings as he continued deciding who should remain as defendants in cases brought by representatives, survivors, and insurance carriers of the victims of the attack. He made similar rulings back in January, this judge did, when the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, three princes, and several financial institutions were also dismissed. On Wednesday, yesterday, the judge dismissed the Saudi High Relief Commission and Saudi Princes Salman and Naif as defendants in three lawsuits. Prince Salman is a member of Saudi Arabia's Council of Ministers and the president of the Relief Commission. And Prince Naif has been the Saudi Minister of the Interior since 1975. Now, the Relief Commission was accused in lawsuits of acting as a component of Al-Qaeda's logistical and financial support infrastructure. Why is that, you ask? Well, the plaintiffs in the case said the U.S. forces raided the Relief Commission's Sarajevo branch in 2001 and found computer hard drives with photographs of the World Trade Center before and after its collapse, along with photos of two U.S. embassies in Africa that were bombed in 1998, and photographs of the USS Cole that was attacked in 2000. The plaintiffs also had alleged that U.S. forces found files on pesticides and crop dusters, the locations of Washington, D.C. government buildings, fake Department of State badges, and cash. Ah, but let's dismiss the lawsuit, because these are Bush family business associates. That's part A. Here's part B. President Bush decided Wednesday to waive any financial sanctions on Saudi Arabia for failing to stop the modern-day slave trade in prostitutes, child sex workers, and forced laborers. This is according to the Associated Press. George Bush says to the Saudis, go ahead, you can continue to bugger the little boys and girls as long as you like. Go ahead, you can continue to bring in 13-year-olds and force them into whorehouses. Go ahead, because you're our business partners and we love you and I love Jesus. In June, the State Department listed 14 countries as failing to adequately address trafficking problems, child sex workers, prostitutes, and forced laborers. Think of that term for just a second. Child sex worker. The State Department listed 14 countries that were not doing enough to address this problem, subjecting them all to possible sanctions if they didn't crack down. One of them was Saudi Arabia. Another one was Kuwait. So yesterday, Bush gives a pass to Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. Gee, I wonder why. Ah, oh, you filthy bastards. Hello, Christians. Hello, Christians. Are you going to send emails to Mr. Bush? Hello, Christians. Hello, Southern Baptist Convention. Hello. 800,000 people a year are bought and sold across national borders. Most of them are women and children. They are used as sex slaves. Hello, Southern Baptist. Hello, Lutheran Synod. Hello, Catholic. Oh, never mind about the Catholic. I lost my head there for a second. Hello, Methodists. Hello, Anglicans. Anybody? Any of you Christians? Hello? So Bush waves any responsibility on the part of Saudi Arabia or Kuwait to stop bringing children into their countries to serve as sex slaves. And you people wonder sometimes why I seem to be eaten up with rage. Are you serious? And you right-wing lurkers that lurk around this program, this is your boy, you disgusting bastards. This is your boy. This is your boy, George Bush. He signed a waiver saying the Saudis and the Kuwaitis could continue to bring in little girls and little boys like your children's ages, you right-wing bastards, to be buggered, to be sex toys. How do you like it? Hello, Southern Baptists. Hello, Methodists. Hello, Lutheran Synod. Hello, Catholic Church. No, never mind. Forget the Catholic Church. I read my New York Times today, and I thought, oh, boy, let me see about this Bill Frist story of insider trading where he cashed in millions of dollars of shares right before HCA, Hospital Corporation of America, that his family owns, before it tanked. And I thought, okay, where is it? Have it. Page A25 in the New York Times. Page 25. There it is. Hey, Senator Bill Frist offered an explanation on Wednesday for the timing of his sale in June of his stake in HCA, the giant hospital company that his family founded, as its shares reached a peak and began a steep slide. Now, you know, Frist, of course, is the wonderful Republican, God-fearing, life-loving, anti-abortion leader of the Senate and brother of the Hospital Corporation of America, Chairman Emeritus. The senator's spokesman, Bob Stevenson, said yesterday that Mr. Frist, quote, made a conscious decision to divest himself of all HCA assets so he could pursue an ambitious agenda of health care legislation free of any appearance of self-interest. You see how that works? This greedy son of a bitch dumps his shares after brother calls him and says, Bill, man, bail out. Damn, we're tanking, bro. Hurry. Okay, I'll do it. So the cover story is, well, the senator made a conscious decision. A conscious decision? Huh. To divest himself of all HCA assets, millions of dollars worth, of course, so he can pursue an ambitious agenda of health care legislation. Oh, really? Is that what you're going to do, Senator Jackass? Is that what... What's wrong with you people in Tennessee? Oh, never mind. Any state that elects Republican representatives or senators deserves whatever unique hell that senator or those representatives bring to the aforementioned state. So wallow in it, Tennessee. Good God. I want to pursue an ambitious agenda of health care legislation, and I want to do it free of any appearance of self-interest, so I'm going to cash out. Okay? No fewer than 19 times since Senator Bill Frist has been a senator have there been accusations about conflicts of interest regarding this pig corporation, HCA. This corporation is probably responsible for more deaths, more bankruptcies, more destruction, and more fraud. 5 years ago, this filthy, filthy company pleaded guilty to 14 criminal counts. They were charged with 200 or 300 of filing fraudulent Medicare reports, paying doctors kickbacks for referrals, raping, assaulting, buggering the healthcare system in this country, as cheap and wicked as it already is. HCA paid $1.7 billion in fines and penalties because of their criminality. And who cares? Who gives a damn? Who cares if people of Tennessee sent this son of a bitch to the Senate? It didn't make any difference.
Take no mess. No!
Papa don't take, no mess. Let me see. And that's, we all know who that is. Papa don't take no mess. And we're getting ready to wind down this Kill Radio 6 p.m. news hour. Friday, last Friday before Christmas 2005. I want to say happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, Merry Christmas, happy holidays to everybody on the planet. Okay. And see, of course, we're listening to James Brown. Before that, we were listening to the Madman out of Atlanta, Georgia, Mike Malloy, on from the Air America outlet down in Atlanta, Georgia, Atlanta, GA. The Madman, Mike Malloy, talking about Senator Bill Fist and Bush allowing sex slaves in Saudi Arabia because he supports the Saudi family. Take a listen to Mike Malloy. He comes on every weekday night on Air America, 11:50 a.m. if you're here in Los Angeles. I love Mike Malloy. Okay, so listen, I'm getting out of here. I'll be here this coming Monday night to do my jazz show, Straight Ahead. Straight Ahead Jazz, every Monday night here on Kill Radio. That's the name of the show, Straight Ahead, with me, Hassan. And you should be able to hear this show on radioforall.net, radio number 4all.net, radioforall.net. And it'll be up on the probably on the Kill Radio homepage in a couple weeks. And again, thanks for listening. And I'm going to sign off. It looks like Xenophone might not be in tonight, so I'll put on one of his shows. So again, you guys have a happy holidays. Let's go back to James Brown. I think James Brown faded out. Let me see if I can. Where'd you go, James? Let me bring him back. Wait a minute. I think I hear him coming back. Again, this is Kill Radio 6 p.m. news winding down, and here we go with Mr. James Brown. Bye. Oh, yeah. And listen, you guys, if you want to reach me, you can email me at HassanJ53@yahoo.com. Okay? That's Hassan with two S's. HassanJ53@yahoo.com. 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 Tell me how you like today's show. Okay, I'll see you.